City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
Hey, babies, this is Cleo.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 354. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Miss Cleo.
In sunny, chilly Florida.
This is, I know that, you know, the people in Chicago and places that have gotten, you know, 12-foot snowdrifts are not really feeling very empathetic towards us Floridians. However, we are really suffering.
Yeah, no, believe you me, I just brought to grapefruit today, so I need you all to stay warm, and I need you to stay warm as an option to go to Florida in February, March, April, and it be hot there so I can get away from here.
Absolutely. Do you guys know that last week they said the only state in the United States that didn't have snow on the ground was Hawaii?
Wow. It's crazy. Well, now, speaking of like bizarre weather and climate, we had many a listener comment on the fact that when you did your top of the year show with us, which you do every year where you take a look at the year ahead, you said that our problems would not be hurricanes this year. They would be earthquakes. And about a week from when we recorded that, it was the day before the show was posted so our listeners could hear it. But just so you know, Cleo and I sometimes record, you know, a few days before you hear it. And that particular show, we had recorded at least a good 6 days before the earthquake in Haiti. Do you, as somebody who is connected with a spiritual world and has an ability to get vibrations or sensations, or I don't know how to describe what it is you do, did you see it coming in that specific a way, or what do you mean when you say this will be the year of earthquakes? And when Haiti hit, you know,
We had a series of quake hits. Mm-hmm. There was Haiti, and then there was one in California, and then I heard you all had one.
We did have one. I didn't feel it because at 4 a.m. I'm feeling nothing. So, I mean, you could literally have, somebody jumping up and down on my head or a fire in the house or anything. I would not know it's happening. No way.
Yeah, no, it was, I certainly did not expect it to occur that quickly. I have to tell you, it was daunting to me because my girlfriend had said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, didn't you talk about earthquakes? And I said, oh, dear God, yes. And then there were just a series of them, smaller ones and larger ones. but that really is, and I do, the vibrations that I get is very specific. You know, I've come to a place now in my journey where I don't question it anymore. And it's a little bit tough sometimes because there are always moments when I welcome the opportunity to be wrong.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, people say, well, you know, do you worry about not? I said, no, I can always be wrong. And that often I sit and I think, oh gosh, well maybe I just didn't hear or see that right, you know. And then when it comes to fruition, it's difficult depending on what it is, you know, that I've perceived or felt or seen. And it makes it, I had a number of friends in Port-au-Prince and have heard from all but one. And just mad love to everyone in the Chicago area and then all of your listeners for all that everyone did, whether it was prayers or money or effort, on behalf of the people that I know there that I love, I say thank you. But, you know, it's tough. You know, I was talking to a student earlier today. I said, it's kind of tough to see a train wreck getting ready to happen and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, sometimes people say gifts. There are times when I say curse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you just, TMFI, you know?
Yeah.
But even, you know, we talked about the weather patterns, not just being these are going to be some permanent dynamics.
Yeah.
That we see, you know, they can continue to talk about El Nino and El Niña. It's not going to have anything to do with anybody's children. It's got everything to do with Mother Earth, you know. And, you know, the transitions will take place whether we are here or not. They have taken place before we got here, and they will take place, you know, throughout. Mm-hmm. And they will take place well after maybe we're living on Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jupiter will do its thing. You know, so, you know, I don't want people, again, to read Armageddon into anything or, you know, because it's not about that. It is, this is natural for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we happen to be in a very observation position where we realize whatever perceived control we had is limited.
Are the people that you know in Port-au-Prince, are they GLBT? And what do you know about the gay community or what resources gay people have in Haiti?
You know, and they are limited because, again, understand you're coming from a very Judeo-Catholic society here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, it was settled very often by the Catholic Crusaders and different types of religions. It is much the same as you would experience in other islands. But there are calamities that seem to take precedence. So you might get robbed. It doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight. There is a small coalition here stateside. It's not enormous because, again, it's still a very limited dynamic. For people who are in a wealthier position, you know, because much like any other country, you have your riches and you have your very, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are in a wealthier position don't have to worry about it because in polite circles it's not discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it's not as tormentous. If you've got the money to be gay, then you're okay.
Yeah.
You
well,
know, but...
And it's so, I mean, I think what's so heartbreaking is the lack of accountability of so many people that we will have, gay or straight or whatever, in that country based on this event.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think that kind of leads us to an interview that you're going to hear today in the show that I cannot believe it's been 10 years, but it is time for the United States Census again. And, you know, we've had a lot of changes in the GLBT community, a lot more visibility, our issues beckoning at the doors of Capitol Hill and in local capitals from state to state. And this is the time that we get counted for, we get a snapshot, we get a count of who is America, who makes up the United States. And for the first time in an unprecedented way, GLBT people as individuals and as couples. There is a huge effort to help count these people. So to help count these people, like I'm not one of them. Help count us. Count us. Hello. It's like, remember you had homeroom in elementary school and you would like make sure you were in the building at the beginning of the school day. So we want the gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender community to say, hey, we're in the building called the United States. So you have to take care of us. We are your family. We are here. We are your workers. We are your taxpayers, whether we get the same rights or not. So it's really important. So we are going to do an I've got an interview here about the census, how you can get involved, how you can volunteer, help count, make sure you're counted. Plus, there's a lot of news, and Richard Knight Jr. taking us to the new Martin Scorsese film. Looks very creepy and scary. Definitely. Leonardo DiCaprio is not into playing these just cutesy roles anymore, is he?
No, he isn't, but he's become quite the talent. I think the young man is really quite formidable. He's grown into quite an actor.
Yeah, he is. I think he's always been quite the actor, but he's just so cute. And like one film, I think it was Blood Diamond, you turned around and he was like a man. He went from like little boy to like man.
He grew up.
Like
and he
in
grew
a
up
snap.
Nicely.
Yeah. So we'll be back with our interview, all you need to know about the U.S. Census, and Ms. Cleo here on the Queercast.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
We call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite, and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. In New Orleans, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the state's Registrar of Vital Statistics must uphold a New York same-sex couple's adoption of a baby born in Louisiana. Orrin Adar and Mickey Ray Smith adopted the baby in 2006. At that time, the judge issued an adoption order. When the couple tried to get a new birth certificate, Louisiana's Registrar's office told them the state did not recognize adoption by unmarried parents.
In New Hampshire, the state's House of Representatives voted 210-109 to kill a proposal that would have struck down the state's marriage equality law. The legislative body also defeated a measure that would have defined marriage as a strictly heterosexual union.
The Hetrick Martin Institute, a nonprofit organization that helps LGBT youths and is in charge of New York City's Harvey Milk High School, will hold its Schools Out fundraiser June 12th on the famous Grey Gardens estate. The estate was the featured set in the documentary Grey Gardens.
Grinnell College, a liberal arts institution in Iowa, has hired Raynard Kington, a black gay man, as its president. Kington was deputy director of the National Institutes of Health.
The Catholic Diocese of Washington, D.C. ended its 80-year-old foster care program because of the district's move to legalize same-sex marriage. Catholic Charities had gotten approximately $20 million each year from the city to provide foster care and other services. However, because it is a Catholic operation, it would have to reject same-sex couples trying to become foster parents.
In Oklahoma, Keith Kimmel, age 28, is suing the state's tax commission after it rejected his request to put I'm gay, on his license plate. The commission said that it can turn down license tags that, quote, may be offensive to the general public. However, it has reportedly allowed STR8 fan, straight fan, and STR8 SXI, straight and sexy.
Republican Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell has taken back measures that former Governor Tim Kaine, a Democrat, put in place to protect gay state workers. Gay rights advocates are urging state legislators to pass a bill protecting state workers from sexual orientation-based discrimination.
Michael Phelps, the former publisher of The Advocate, died in his Los Angeles home February 10th at the age of 45. Phelps started at the publication in 1996.
In world news, England's military is actively recruiting gay individuals to serve, having posted ads in publications such as The Pink Paper. Since dropping its ban on openly gay and lesbian service members in 2000, the military has accommodated them in several ways, including introducing housing for married individuals after Britain granted civil partnerships in 2005. In addition, the United Kingdom has reported no problems with cohesion, morale, or other factors since 2000.
In Mexico, the states of Guanajuato, Jalisco, Sonora, Tlaxcala, and Morelos are putting together a legal challenge to Mexico City's new marriage equality law. Mexico City approved the same-sex marriage measure December 21, 2009, but powerful conservatives have expressed their opposition to the development. The first same-sex marriages are slated to take place next month.
In India, Aligarh Muslim University has asked Professor S.R. Siras to leave his campus residence and face a committee after he allegedly engaged in gay sex acts in his home. A group of people apparently submitted a video of the professor in an indecent posture with a young man, leading university authorities to suspend Siras. In July 2009, the Delhi High Court ruled that gay sex was legal.
In England, broadcaster Ray Gosling, age 70, has been released on bail after answering questions regarding his public admission that he once suffocated a same-sex lover dying of AIDS with a pillowcase. Authorities are expected to investigate the case by interviewing friends, conducting searches, and analyzing evidence.
In entertainment news, gay-friendly hunk Ryan Reynolds has a new gig as the face of Hugo Boss Cologne. Reynolds, who wed actress Scarlett Johansson in 2008... is the star of the upcoming comic book film Green Lantern.
The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, will honor Drew Barrymore and Wanda Sykes. Barrymore will be honored with the Vanguard Award, which is presented to professionals who have increased the visibility and understanding of the LGBT community. Sykes will receive the Stephen F. Kolzak Award, which is presented to an openly GLBT media professional.
R&B singer Akon has said that he can now retire early because Lady Gaga has signed with his Interscope Records imprint, Con Live. "She's pretty much retired me," he said. "She was definitely a blessing. She came at the right moment. I'm glad I believed in her." That goes to show you, if you believe in something strong enough, it will pay off.
Actors Michael Douglas and Matt Damon are slated to play lovers in an upcoming film about the late pianist Liberace. The film's director, Steven Soderbergh of Traffic, said, "We've already done some costume and wardrobe tests on Michael, and they're very, very, very good. Michael amazed me. He crushed it," Soderbergh said. Liberace died in 1987 of an AIDS-connected illness.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Could there be any creepier setting for a movie than a madhouse for the criminally insane, located on a remote island during a raging thunderstorm circa the late 1940s, early 50s, the era of electroshock, lobotomies, and other gruesome therapies for the mentally ill? That's the setting for Shutter Island, the fourth teaming between director Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo plays Teddy Daniels, a federal marshal trying to locate a missing patient at the mysterious Ashcliff Hospital for the criminally insane. Teddy and his partner, Chuck, played by Mark Ruffalo, try to break through the wall of secrets that the staff, headed by Ben Kingsley and Max von Sydow, seem to be hiding. Due to the bad weather, the duo is forced to stay on the island. Asleep at night, Teddy has spectacularly vivid nightmares of a wife, a hauntingly infected Michelle Williams, who burned up in a fire while he was away in World War II, helping to free the Jewish concentration camp victims at Dachau. The story, with its slew of insane inmate characters, surly guards, nasty nurses, cultured mad doctors, etc., offers a lot of opportunities for actors to get their crazy faces on, and Scorsese has the budget to hire some of the best. Kingsley, Max von Sydow, as mentioned, are joined by Patricia Clarkson, Emily Mortimer, Ted Levine, Jackie Earle Haley, Elias Koteas, and a lot more, ratcheting up the over-the-top scenario and the ominous mise-en-scene nearly into Mel Brooks' high-anxiety territory. At times, the atmosphere is so thick one almost expects Cloris Leachman as Nurse Diesel to come stomping out of the dark in a Nazi uniform. But though the movie threatens, it never descends to camp for more than a second or two. Like this Scorsese of Cape Fear, I can't talk again today, sorry. This dark operatic approach is a risk that pays off in big time. Shutter Island is an enthralling big-budget melange of classic Hitchcock and film noir, packaged with Scorsese's gift for large-scale visuals and DiCaprio's gifted performance. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute Tongue Twister for this week.
Live the fairy tale with the Joffrey Ballet's Cinderella. Only the Joffrey brings Sir Frederick Ashton's Cinderella back to America. The Chicago Tribune calls it a wonderland for adults and a surefire delight for kiddies. Glorious dancing and a magnificent score by Sergei Prokofiev. Buy your tickets before the clock strikes midnight. Cinderella at the Auditorium Theater February 17th through the 28th. Call 800-982-2787 or order online at Ticketmaster.com now.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 22nd, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. A rock and roll adventure explodes in The Who's Tommy. With rock concert staging by Jeff Award-nominated director Jeff Button, don't miss this electrifying production, playing now through March 7th at the Theater and Interpretation Center at Northwestern University in Evanston. For tickets, visit tic.northwestern.edu.
About Face Theater presents the long-anticipated production of What Once We Felt, written by Anne-Marie Healy and directed by Chrissy Vanderwalker at the Center on Halsted. It's playing now through March 6th. Visit aboutfacetheater.com for tickets.
The brother-sister plays by out playwright Terrell Alvin McCraney is the theatrical event of the Chicago winter, says the Tribune. Three interconnected plays, which the New York Times raves, you experience something rare, a new, authentically original vision. Visit steppenwolf.org for tickets to the brother-sister plays.
Lifeline Theater continues its 27th anniversary season with a world premiere adaptation of Rachel Ingalls' postmodern fable, Mrs. Caliban. It runs Thursday through Sunday, all the way through March 28th. For more at lifelinetheater.com.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
The Harris Theater hosts two of Broadway's biggest names in March. Stephen Sondheim celebrates his 80th birthday during a special Q&A and conversation with Gary Griffin on March 4th. And Tony Award-winning actress Christine Ebersole performs a concert of Broadway favorites one night only, March 25th. Visit harristheaterchicago.org. Tickets are going fast.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi, this is Amy Sedaris, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Hold on to hope, love. I've searched high and low for you. Each day gets closer, so hold.
Well, everyone, in March, households everywhere will receive their 2010 United States Census forms. They'll come to you in the mail. And what makes this year's census even more unprecedented is this outreach by the U.S. Census leaders to include the LGBT and allied communities in these efforts this year so that they can get a snapshot of the nation's accurate count on who, you know, who we are and where we are. Che Rudell Tabasola is advising the U.S. Census Bureau's National LGBT Partnerships Outreach. And I'm really glad to have Che on the show today just to talk more about the census and how you can get involved and get informed. Hey, Che, how are you doing?
Good morning, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're at a big conference this weekend doing this exact same thing, talking to people about the census. Where are you?
I am in Dallas, Texas. And we just wrapped up the Create and Change Conference organized by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force.
Now, that's a real way to mobilize the movers and the shakers in the LGBT community. And hopefully doing interviews like this for the Queercast is another way to get people informed and talk about what your role is and what the census is trying to do different this year. How often do we take a census in the U.S.?
The census is done every 10 years. It's laid out by the U.S. Constitution.
And what is just the primary goal of the census in general?
Well, at its core, the census is about achieving a head count of every person living in the United States, both citizens and non-citizens, to achieve fair and equal congressional representation in the House of Representatives. Of course, over time, questions have been added and changed, and actually, every question on the census form is mandated by a federal law. So, for example, we now collect data around race and ethnicity, and that helps us enforce things such as the Voting Rights Act.
Okay. Now, is every household going to receive a census?
Yes and no. Millions of census forms will be mailed out to every household, but it's not the only way that we collect census data. For example, up in Alaska, there's nomadic tribes where they don't have a quote-unquote household the way that you and I might think of it. And in that case, enumerators, and actually Director Groves went up there about 2 or 3 weeks ago and took the count in person like that. Of course, there's enumerators that will be covering the United States in April to count places where homeless people might gather, where transient populations might be, so we can count everybody in the United States.
Now, during the last census 10 years ago, how was the GLBT community accounted for at that time?
In 2000, the LGBT people had the opportunity to identify as a part of a same-sex headed household by checking off the unmarried partner category. Unfortunately, at that time, the census, if you checked off as a same-sex married couple, the census, for a lot of methodological reasons, would actually change and alter that data to count you as a same-sex unmarried partner as opposed to being a married couple. But this year, what's really exciting and historic, it's going to be the first year that the Census Bureau is going to preserve and report out that count of same-sex married couples. And then, of course, we will still have the count of same-sex partners.
Now, What is your role with the census? Why do they need somebody guiding the LGBT partnerships outreach? And what is the partnership outreach arm of this new census initiative?
Well, the census, like you had said, has done this unprecedented outreach to LGBT communities, and it's very exciting. It actually grew at a very grassroots level. The Census Bureau employs thousands of partnership specialists, which is kind of really the equivalent of a field organizer. And these field organizers work with a number of hard-to-count populations, such as non-English speakers, immigrant communities. And this year, for the first time, their partnership specialists hired specifically to work with LGBT communities. Many of these folks had volunteered for the job. Some of the partnership specialists are not even LGBT themselves, but they have a friend or a family member, and so they asked to take on this body of work. However, at headquarters, what was happening there wasn't a whole lot of support for these folks, and there also wasn't the resources. The census produces toolkits for all these hard-to-count communities, and so I was brought on to help coordinate and synergize and really maximize our efforts in the field, as well as to help with some national communications and strategy.
Now, just to let people know, before you were working with the census, you were working with the Human Rights Campaign. You directed HRC's Equality Forward study about the lives and experiences of LGBT people of color. So you've had a lot of experience in getting a snapshot and actual statistics and information on how we live and who we are and where we are. But they're also really utilizing a lot of organizations who are getting behind the census on this within the LGBT community. Who are some of those organizations that you all are working with?
Well, if you go to ourfamiliescount.org, there is a volunteer-driven public education campaign around the census. And I think right now we have more than 90 different organizations. And it's so incredible to see the range, because they are the national organizations like the Human Rights Campaign and GLAAD, as well as the businesses like Whittick Combs, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, as well as the community centers like the Nevada LGBT Center and the Los Angeles Community Center. And it's been a place where organizations across the movement of different sizes and different missions can come together and collaborate to do this very important work.
So how are they practically helping, besides obviously supporting the census's initiative with this? I mean, how can local organizations get involved in helping the census get an accurate count?
Sure. There's some very concrete things. The first is that every organization is invited to join the census as a national partner. Mm. And once you're a national partner with the Census Bureau, that's the quickest and most efficient way to get the latest information, the latest updates, and the latest resources from the U.S. Census. And like I said, there's about two dozen LGBT field organizers for the Census Bureau, and their jobs is to support these organizations to conduct actions.
Mm.
A lot of these organizations who have something such as a website, a Facebook page, an email list, you know what, we actually have a lot of material that they could very easily cut and paste into their own communications, add into their own weekly e-newsletter to get across some very basic messages. You know what, the census is historic. It's the first count of same-sex married couples. If you're transgender, we will count you as a gender in which you identified. It's completely safe. All the information is confidential. And very critically, fill out the form and mail it back.
So this information, this entire LGBT-inspired community campaign, because it is really our community, as you said, it's been a grassroots effort that now has become an entire arm of the U.S. Census, I guess, outreach and what are the new communities that they're really trying to get an accurate count. This campaign is called Our Families Count. And as Che just mentioned, the website is ourfamiliescount.org. And we'll have that linked in our notes. What kind of things will they see, Che, when our listeners go to ourfamiliescount.org? And how can they utilize that site? I know it's a bilingual site, too, correct?
Yes, we launched the site both in English and Spanish, and it's always been a campaign to include everybody. You know, what I always remind people is the reason we're doing this is there's a dramatic under-reporting of same-sex couples on the census. If you look at some studies following the 2000 census, anywhere from 16 to 50% of same-sex couples did not identify as unmarried partners in the census. And we have every reason to believe that that number is even higher among communities of color.
Mm.
So Our Families Count website did launch in both English and Spanish, and there's a lot of basic information from how does the census count LGBT people? How is the information used? To how can I get a job with the census? We're hiring thousands of enumerators to go out and knock on doors beginning in April.
Oh, great. So is the goal just to get an accurate count, or what would be the goals for the LGBT community to really make sure they're seen in this census?
It's a good question. You know, yes, our goal here is to get a complete and accurate count of every same-sex headed family in the country. And with that, all these other things come, because the work that we do with the data is so important to our work. There's nothing like the census in terms of the authority of a data set in the United States. You know, for example, in the 2000 census, we found that there was 1 million lesbian gay veterans in U.S. Armed Services.
Hmm.
We found out that there was 250,000 children being raised in same-sex headed families, but those children have poverty rates twice those as of children growing up in heterosexual headed families. And so I think that information is so critical to us. Yes, it's about visibility, but yes, it has a very real impact in our work.
Mm. And hopefully change comes from us being seen. I mean, you know, it was the statement of Harvey Milk so many years ago, really starting this movement, that and Stonewall and the visibility movement of our community. But what kind of change can that really impact if America sees the numbers of us and how we live and who we are?
You're absolutely right. Visibility is the keystone of our movement. And it's not only just the numbers, but I think it's the diversity and the breadth of our families. One of the features of the Our Families Count website that I think is most exciting is there's a picture window. And in there, it really begins to reflect this true mosaic of our different faces and our families and how our families are made up. And there's very few places where we're doing that, you know. And, you know, I've had conversations about that picture window on the Our Families Count homepage where people have said to me, you know, I've never seen gay people who look like this. And I think that's potentially really transformative. And, reminding people that we are your neighbors and we're members of your community. And in case of the census, we care very much about funding for hospitals and schools and parks. And that's why we believe it's important to participate in the census.
So are there any projections? Does the census project, or do any of these other organizations and project and say we're going to see a spike in how many same-sex people and how many same-sex couples are in the U.S. With this new census?
No, I don't believe there's any sorts of projections. Every year, the American Community Survey does come out, and that does determine give some guidelines in terms of the number of same-sex headed families. But that's actually a question for my friend Gary Gates, the great demographer at the Williams Institute. In the 2000 census, there was just under 600,000 same-sex headed families who identified.
That was it?
yes. And, you know, one of the things when we look at the change in numbers, what we always have to remember is that it's not necessarily it was a very dramatic increase, that 600,000 from, I believe it was just under 200,000 who identified in the 1990 census, is that we're not looking at an increase in numbers necessarily as much as an increase in folks identifying on the census form.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, making the projections in those estimates becomes a little bit trickier.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I just feel like, you know, when we look at just how much visibility has increased in the past decade in our media, in our legislation, you know, I think it's an exciting time to get a real accurate snapshot of who we are and where we are. And that's really relevant for, I think, a lot of political legislation on a local state and federal level as we continue to have these big debates. Will there be something different in the state of California to recognize and the other states where marriage is legal, or will it be the same for everyone? And if your marriage is quote unquote legal, that will be identified in that way.
You bring up a very good point. You know, the census counts people as we self-identify, and every same-sex married couple who identifies as so on the census will be counted.
Okay.
That's regardless if they live somewhere, whether or not their marriage may or may not be recognized.
Okay. So there won't be any difference between your same-sex couple, your same-sex married couple. Is there a difference between that? The actual question?
On the form, you can identify as either same-sex partners or same-sex married couples. We'll have both of those numbers.
Great, great, great. How many questions involve the LGBT community on the census? Because obviously there's many, many questions beyond people's sexual orientation.
The form is really easy. It's 10 questions. And I would say, you know, all of the questions affect LGBT people. And to clarify, there is no sexual orientation question or gender identity question on the census. But
okay.
The census asks it, your sex, and like I had said, transgender individuals will be counted as whichever gender they identify. And then you have the in the relationship question, question six, I believe it's the top of page 2, the census form.
Great.
You have the opportunity to identify as a same-sex headed household.
Well, everyone, this is going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of talk about this the next couple of months, March, April. You may see somebody out there trying to gather these numbers, or you know, the census will come in the mail to you. You can also get involved. They are looking for people to help with the census, and there's lots of information for you to forward on to your friends, family members, at the website for the LGBT-inspired community campaign called Our Families Count. That website is ourfamiliescount.org. And as we said, there are question and answers found there in English and Spanish, and details that will help you make sure that your household is accurately accounted for in this year's census. Che, thank you so much for being on with us, and we hope everyone gets out there and gets counted.
Thanks so much, Jamie. Everyone, please fill out the form and mail back.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
So, Cleo, it's so lovely to have you on again. I hope it warms up there for you in Florida. I mean, you might have to head north to get some heat.
You know what? I don't know where I'm heading, but if this is where we're going with this, I am definitely moving. I do not like wearing layers of clothing.
And you have to stay indoors a lot more, right?
Well, you know what, you're trying, but if you have to move about the cabin, you have to get out there. See, and here's the quip about anybody who lives in South Florida. We only have 3 or 4 outfits that are for cold weather. Outside of that, we're doing more laundry than we've ever done before.
Yeah, you've got the one cotton cardigan, and that's kind of what you have.
And you might have a pair of tights that you wore with a pair of high heels. Now you have to wear them with leg warmers. Come on, though.
Well, here's the one thing. You have one more good week of really feeling like you're a part of the Vancouver Olympics. You really can feel a part of it.
They needed snow in Vancouver. What are you talking about?
I know, but, you know, I just think it's very funny that, you know, it's almost now the whole world with Avatar and everything. Everything's becoming so 3D. And I remember a long time ago, like back in the 70s, you know, all of the Divine films and John Hughes films, they would have scratch and sniff, like you'd watch those bad B-grade movies and scratch and smell things. And, you know, now we're all watching the Winter Olympics and everyone in the United States is cold. So I don't know. Seems fitting.
Interesting. It's very interesting. But no, it's going to warm up for everybody. But did the groundhog see a shadow, or he didn't?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I know they had Punxsutawney Phil out. I know the groundhog's name, but I don't know. I think he said 6 more weeks of winter. Well, that sounds about right.
Has he ever not said 6 more weeks of winter? I feel like he never sees his shadow.
It's been a couple of years when he said it's going to be an earlier one. I got to tell you, the animals know a lot more than we. So I kind of got to go with Punxsutawney Phil and defer to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what our summer looks like. And, you know, and just continue to move through, and we'll all adjust as we need to. We will all adjust as we need to. But getting back to the census, I think that if people feel strongly about it, if you do want to have your voices counted, then you do need to participate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, we are coming to a time in this country, if you do want it, it's no longer about being passive. You know that, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
You're really going to have to voice out. So, and it cannot just be the few. It does have to be the collective. It really does, in order for it to matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order for it, if they say this is the way they do the funding and base it on this X, Y, and Z, then, you know, if they see the actual numbers, they might really. You heard that Cheney said, about a week ago, that it was time now for the U.S. military to change its thought process about the GL community.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, okay.
Yep.
Jezus is on his way back. You know, he has an openly gay daughter, and now all of a sudden it is comfortable for him to change. This is Dick Cheney. This is the vice president who ran the country for 8 years.
Yeah.
Now saying that it is time, because even he has to understand that his hypocrisy can no longer stand in light of what they are losing.
Yeah.
You have plenty of GL members who want to be who they are and still serve their country.
Absolutely.
That's another debate for another day. But if somebody wants to do that, by virtue of who they love, how do you get to take that from them?
Yeah.
How does that not get to be part of their honor?
Yeah.
And because things are looking different, they really are cutting themselves off. And they're cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Yeah. No, I think it's entirely shocking about Dick Cheney. And I think a gay gremlin has possessed his body. And that's all that can be the only answer for the fact that he's changed on this, because he was so staunch about it, even with his gay daughter, for so many years. So maybe
you
he's starting to thaw, just like we all are with the sunshine coming out.
Well, here's the thing that I think brought about the change for him. You know, his daughter just a couple of years ago, and her wife became parents.
Yep.
And so he has a grandchild from a gay couple. From a lesbian couple, and I do believe if there is any softening to be had, it is that child that is softening his heart, and I'll take it.
So if you're listening and you have problems with your parents not understanding your homosexuality, give birth to a child, is essentially what we're saying.
Yeah.
I think it's a good mission. That's a bumper sticker. It's kind of a lot to put on a bumper sticker, but definitely would work on a T-shirt, just not a tank.
Right.
So
because children, again, you know, they have a way of cutting through all of the madness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the child is only a couple of years old, and there are certain things that you just cannot argue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if they make good parents, why would they not? If they defend their child, why can they not defend their country?
It's true.
And it needs to stop being about all these old things. And, you know, Dick Cheney I have some other adjectives I'd like to use to describe him other than grandfather, but he still has the right of a grandfather. And guess what? Grandfather's heart, even still, in their staunchness and their stodginess, can be softened by the gentle touch of a child's hand to their face.
That's the whole point, is that Mary Cheney and her family will be counted in this census and were not before.
Yes,
and the father, Dick Cheney, I mean, it's a great metaphor, is, you know, starting to say that my child and my grandchild count. So it wraps us all full circle. Cleo, it's so great to have you on the show. We look forward to having you on all the time. And we're going to get you to Chicago, maybe in warmer weather, but we're going to get you up here very soon, so all of you listeners can come out and meet Cleo.
I'm looking forward to it.
So we wish you warmth, and I wish all of you listening some warmer days. And we'll be back on the Queercast the next show. Legendary Broadway actress and Tony Award winner Christine Ebersole on the show with me. She's coming to Chicago. She's got a new CD. There's so much to talk about, in specifically, of course, her fabulous performance in Grey Gardens on Broadway. So Christine Ebersole on the next Queercast. Cleo, take good care.
All right, baby love. You too. Warmer days, my dear. Easy journey.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.